We have is case number 53959, In Re T. Alanius, a child. We have Mr. Halstead is the counsel for the appellant. He's with the Washoe County District Attorney's Office. And the counsel for the respondent is Mr. David C. O'Mara. Mr. Halstead, will you be arguing?
Yes.
Okay. For the state of Nevada, Mr. Halstead.
Thank you, Justice Cherry. Justices.
Haddlestead, excuse me. I mispronounced your name.
Not a problem. It's not the first time. I just want to see you spell it, though.
H-A-T-L-E-S-T-A-D.
Oh, you're looking, though.
Just because they spelled it right doesn't mean I can read it. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Gary Haddlestead with the state. We're the appellant in this case, Your Honor. With me today is Shelley Scott. She's a juvenile deputy DA. Very interested in this case. She tried it in the lower court.
Ms. Scott, welcome to the Nevada Supreme Court.
Your Honors, this case is about an appeal from a lower court order denying our motion to certify a juvenile as an adult. The lower court in this case concluded that we had violated a procedural rule in filing this petition or in filing our motion for certification. The court denied our request, and then after denying our request on a procedural ground, went ahead and ruled on the merits, concluding that retention in the juvenile court was appropriate under the Seven Minors case. We respectfully submit that the lower court erred in this matter and that the court should reverse. The facts of this case are, to an extent, not in too much dispute, although there are nuances that Mr. O'Mara will point out to you where there are discrepancies that we may disagree about the culpability of Mr. Lanius in contrast to his co-offenders, Shadrach and Devin, the other participant. But the case arose in an incident that occurred in February of 2007 where Mr. Lanius and two other young men severely beat a man by the name of Gabriel Padilla. They arrived at the scene of Mr. Padilla's residence, and they had weapons. Mr. Lanius was alleged to have armed himself with a stick with a metal pole or metal end or a weight at the end of it. There was a fight. It was primarily initiated by Mr. Shadrach Stevenson, by virtue of a dispute he had with Mr. Padilla about the whereabouts of his mother. The three men arrived together. We submit that they were acting in concert, essentially showing an agreement to act in a violent manner, and then did so. Mr. Stevenson initiated the fight with Mr. Padilla, and then the others joined in as the fight ensued. Mr. Padilla was severely injured in this fight. After the fight was over, the men left. Thereafter, Mr. Lanius was unable to be found by local authorities until January of 2009, when he arrived at the McCarran Airport. January of 2009. Some of the dates are important. I don't want to bore you with a whole pile of dates, but that one's important. He's apprehended at the Las Vegas airport returning from the Philippines. And that's when he is essentially served with the petition. The proceedings occur in the regular course of business thereafter. The other important dates, and again, I don't want to pile on dates here, but March 2009, the state filed the petition alleging the crimes against Mr. Lanius. February of 2009. I wrote all these dates down myself. I kind of bogged myself down. February of 2009, he served with a petition. And then in March 12th of 2009, the certification motion was filed. Okay, so those are the key dates. Meanwhile, however, between the filing of the petition and the occurrence of the crime, Mr. Lanius is already on probation for a violent felony involving cruelty to an animal. He's on some sort of supervision and probation. According to his probation officer, Mr. Clark, he's only complied with 3 of the 12 or 14 requirements of his probation. Meanwhile, he commits another felony offense in Lassen County for drugs, and then we have this offense. And that's what culminated in our request for certification. Now, the lower court concluded that we had not filed this motion in a timely fashion because under a local rule, rule number 33, this motion has to be filed within 30 days of the filing of the petition. This was problematic, it seemed to me, and I raised this issue in our brief, even though it was not raised in the lower court, as a matter of plain error, And I thought it was somewhat interesting because the rule incorporates statutes that were repealed. So the question becomes, what is the effect of the statute if we had not filed a petition under the currently existing statutory scheme under Chapter 62, which 62A through F. The rule cites to Chapter 62.128 and 62080. Those statutes have been repealed. Our position in this appeal with respect to the procedural prong of the argument is that with the repeal of those statutes, we did not file a petition in compliance with the statute, so the time bar found in the rule does not apply.
Counsel, let me ask you a question. Even if we were to adopt your argument with respect to the procedural issues in this case, what is the standard of review upon which we review Judge Daugherty's decision? And I think that that gets to the core of her decision in this case.
Right, and that's exactly how I see it. My position on behalf of the state is there was a violation of the old rule, or I should say the currently existing rule, by virtue of the enactment or incorporation of the repealed statutes. But regardless of how the court rules on that, we still have to go to the merits. And so we do get to a question about the merits. On the other hand, that being said, if the court agrees with Judge Daugherty about the application of Rule 33 and that we violated it, we're pretty much done now. There's no reason to go into the discussion of the merits. So from the state's point of view,
for purposes of appellate consideration, I'm very interested in whether or not you think she did something wrong that would arise to a level that we could review and reverse.
Yes.
I'm wondering whether or not it isn't an abuse of discretion standard and whether or not we might keep our nose out of it.
Well, I think it is an abuse of discretion, and I've raised it as plain error because it seems to be clearly apparent from a casual review of the record. So it's plain error in our view. So our position in this case is that even though we would appear to have violated the terms of the rule, the error is that's a reversible error on her part, so we still need to go to the merits. I hope that makes sense. You know, we hear all the time, at least I see it all the time, that the courts in the state of Nevada have a difficulty following regularly and consistently all the procedural bars. That's what happened here.
You're usually on the other side of this issue.
Right, right. I mean, you know, the last thing I want to see is more fodder for that argument.
And one of the problems that would arise if we would, in fact, do a de novo review of this case, then we would be doing de novo reviews of every single certification without seeing the witnesses, without really having all the documents in front of us, as the family court judge has. And so that's what, one of the arguments that we have in conference is when it's abuse of discretion, I mean, we can't turn it into a de novo review, and I almost think that's what you're asking for, is a de novo review in this case.
Not exactly. De novo review of the interpretation of the rule, yes. That would be just strict statutory construction.
I'm not worried about that issue.
Okay.
I'm more concerned about the merits of the certification, of the denial of the certification.
Exactly. That's abuse of discretion under the standard of seven minors, arbitrary and capricious abuse of discretion, contrary to the bounds of reason. That's the standard of review.
But here's what I worry about if we go in your favor. That means every time there's a certification, if there's any type of mitigation and four justices decide that the mitigation is enough, we would reverse these certifications. And I'm sure no DA, whether it be a rural DA, a Washoe DA, or a Clark County DA, wants us to be sticking our nose in those certification hearings in that manner.
Well, and the denial, as we have here, is even more profoundly of concern to me, because then we are making a decision that I believe everything that has been written in this area tells us is uniquely within the division judge's purview.
I agree with that, and that's what the cases say. Our position in this appeal is that the judge, Judge Daugherty, with all due respect, even though she discounted the two important factors from the Seven Miners case, that was an abuse of discretion because she discounted facts that appear that she did not appreciate the magnitude of them. So that's why I'm suggesting to you it's an abuse of discretion. Mm-hmm. Let me highlight just a couple. For example, the first factor in the decisional matrix is the seriousness and nature of the crime. Now, in this case, without dispute, and just Judge Daugherty acknowledged that a battery with a deadly weapon and battery causing substantial bodily harm are serious offenses. I don't think any reasonable person would disagree with that. But the question that she hinged her decision on was the level of culpability of Mr. Lanius. Her words were something to the effect of, he was one of three actors in this event. The implication being he was not the driving force of the event, and therefore his culpability was reduced. I submit to the court that she misapprehended material facts in the record that amount to an abuse of discretion. That's our position on that prong of the test. In addition, the remaining factor that's of significance here is the seriousness and persistency of Mr. Lanius's adjudicated and admitted record. She seemed to discount that as well in exercising her discretion. I submit to the court, with all due respect to her, that she discounted these things improperly as an abuse of discretion, overlooking key and important material matters in the record. And that's why I suggest to the court that it was an abuse of discretion. And since, again, our argument, if factor one and factor two, standing alone, impel certification, then there should be a certification. In a close case, you look at the other factors, the subjective character personality factors. This, I submit to the court, is not really a close case at all. As a result, what we have here is an abuse of discretion on factors one and two and a ruling on factor three alone. That, I submit to the court, is a reversible error.
And where in Seven Minors does it say that if you get past one and two, you don't need to get to the others?
Well, I don't have the page number right offhand, but I know what it says. And it says if factor one or factor two, standing alone, impels certification, then we don't decide the case on factor three.
It's her judgment to determine whether or not it is so compelling.
Absolutely. It's addressed to her sound discretion. I'm just suggesting to the court it was an abuse of discretion to get rid of factor one and two so hastily. I think there are other facts she should have taken into consideration. And had she done so, she would have reached a different conclusion.
One of my other concerns is somebody who practiced quite a bit in this area as a criminal defense attorney in the juvenile court, is a lot of times there were situations where if you would just look at the offense, it's a nasty offense, it's terrible, the child is a bad actor, but the court would say it's better to be on a probation in the juvenile court and be supervised by the juvenile court than to go to the district court where most likely they would get probation. And that's why I don't want to mingle into the affairs of the family judge that are hearing these matters. I really don't. I want to see if it's an absolute abuse of discretion, there's no doubt you're entitled to reversal. But it's just one of those situations where this is such a valuable area of the justice system, the juvenile system, that we're real hesitant to try to do any type of review and second guess a judge who hears everything that in this case. That's just my view.
I understand that. I think.
And that's to the benefit of the district attorney's office, really, too, absolutely. In many, many respects.
Right. I agree. And let's just face the facts. The court has affirmed more denials than reversed granted, let's put it that way. There's very few cases where cases have come up where there's been a suggestion that the lower court erred in denying certification and then reversed that. There have been a few that have upheld it, Seven Minors, Three Minors, and William S., and I think Jeremiah B., I think, are the four. So the court has some precedent for having done what you're suggesting maybe we ought to be careful about. And I'm in agreement with that. I think there ought to be there's deference. The state uses a deferential standard all the time. And what's sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander.
Let there be no mistake. We do pre-conference these cases. Each and every one of us are deeply concerned about the conduct that the facts in this case show us. We might have, as district judges, made a different decision. But that is precisely what we are warned against doing. And that's, I think, where you hear these questions coming from.
And I agree with that. We have lots of cases. I've argued a lot of those cases where that's exactly the nature of the debate. There's some prudence involved by the court, the deferential standard of review, and it's there for a reason. You don't want to meddle in the findings, particularly if they're supported by substantial evidence or not clearly wrong. So I guess my argument, cutting to the chase, is these facts, I should say, the legal conclusion reached by the trial judge that the nature and seriousness of the offense was discounted and the persistency of the adjudicated conduct was not appropriately measured, and therefore her conclusion was not based on substantial evidence because there's so much contrary evidence. So let me just highlight a couple. I've got just about a minute and a half left. You know, the seriousness of this offense, one of the cases the court was concerned about, this Jeremiah B. case, if I remember correctly. He was involved in a drunk driving incident that led to the death of another person. One of the things that concerned the court, and I think it was Justice Springer wrote the opinion in that case, like he did a lot of these cases, is he noted that there was an accident and there was negligence involved. That's not our case. You know, no one, I think, is going to argue that battery with a deadly weapon and battery causing substantial bodily harm, especially the kind of harm Mr. Padilla suffered, was anything but a serious offense. But what we have are three men, including Mr. Lanius, with very serious intentions. They're armed. Their actions had very serious consequences. Their conduct was willful. And at least under the Jeremiah B. analysis, we could conclude that it is egregious and heinous. This is not a case in which, again, this is our position. I think Judge Doherty was completely wrong about this, given Mr. Lanius's history, that he's the kind of person that the juvenile court should retain jurisdiction over because he has not availed himself of anything they provided to him. He's had two shots, and yet, after the second shot, he ends up brutally beating this man in this incident. Well, my time is up. If there's any other questions, I think you know what my position is, and I think questions are well taken. We take them seriously, and again, just to wrap it, we think the juvenile court abused her discretion by discounting the relevant facts in this case, playing up the unimportant facts and overlooking others, and the procedural bar should be rejected.
Thank you for your argument in this matter.
Counsel, as you're approaching, I need for you to consider what I believe to be where our appellant left off, and that is it certainly does seem to me that if we ever did want to meddle in a decision of a judge, this might be the one because of the egregious nature of this crime, the history of this young man. He attacked an animal with a hatchet, as I understand it, and was on probation. He has some drug offenses for which he failed to take any control of or responsibility for, and now he ends up in what appears to be a preliminary act leading most likely to more serious offenses. Isn't this the time when we should meddle in the decision made by the judge below?
Good morning, Your Honor. Your Honors, thank you very much for having us here today. May it please the court. My name is David O'Mara, and I represent the juvenile in this case, Mr. T. Lanius. I certainly will skip to my introduction and go directly to your point. And we're looking at the decisional matrix. And I understand your concern, but I think that Judge Doherty specifically and very conscientiously took this case and deconstructed all aspects of Mr. Lanius as well as all the actions of this case. And when we look at what Judge Doherty did, irrespective of our position that there was no prosecutorial merit in the underlying offense in regards to this case, but if we look at the decisional matrix in seven minors, we're looking at the three elements. The one, nature and seriousness of the offense. Now, the state just wants to argue that it's whatever the seriousness of it. Well, if that's the case, then all serious charges are going to be automatically certified as an adult. But what we have to take into consideration and what this court has previously done in cases such as In re Eric A.L., in which it takes into what are the underlying nature of the actual offense that's being alleged. And in that case, in the Eric case, the court looked at it and said, well, the issue of the first element, which is the nature and seriousness, there were only two transactions of a serious crime, which is the trafficking of drugs or the sale of drugs. And that during that, he was accompanied by an older brother. And that there was only a couple transactions. And that's the same thing that's happening here in this case. And you've heard just a second ago from the state saying that it was Shadrach Stevens who initiated the alleged offense. It was Mr. Lanius, a juvenile, who was with him. And so you look at the nature, and it's clear that the judge looked at the nature of of the seriousness of the offense was. And so when you look at that and you take it into consideration and you look at how concerned Judge Doherty was in looking at this first element to find out that there was no necessity to certify as an adult on this issue, and that's making her decision that factor one is not enough to necessitate an adult, she specifically said, they have reservations with respect to his direct behaviors and aggression towards the victim. there was clearly evidence showing that maybe Mr. Lanius was not really that involved at all. In fact, the only allegation that was even had any evidential basis was that Mr. Lanius may have held on to the arm of Mr. Bedelia. And at that time, the evidence also showed that Mr. Bedelia was on top of Mr. Shadrach Stevens, brandishing a weapon, a gun, and pistol whipping Mr. Shadrach Stevens at the same time. That's the only evidence showing any aggression by Mr. Lanius. And the court looked at that and he said, okay, the aggression really is more towards Mr. Shadrach Stevens. And it's confirmed again by the state in which they talk about the initiation by Mr. Stevens. So by taking those issues, we're looking at the nature of the case. If we always just look at the seriousness and don't look at the culpability or at the actual actions of the minor, then we're always going to adult certify. And that's just not going to happen, because what happens if Mr. Lanius was just sitting in the car as the driver? It's a serious crime, but the nature is different. And so it's clear that the judge really looked at that and looked at the evidence, which, you know, as the court has stated, you don't have in front of you because you didn't get to see the evidence. You didn't get to see in real time the testimony of Mr. Bedelia or his wife or the officer. And so when we look at, you know, going in and picking the brain of the judge, we're looking at what did she know? And it's clear that she really looked at this issue and really deconstructed it in a way that she found that the factor was not met. And then you go to the second one, and it's the same case in the Eric case, the AL case. In that case, they only found that there were two prior adjudications against the juvenile. And then this is the same case, Mr. Lanius. Okay? He has two adjudications, and the court looked at one of them and said, well, as Justice Sadas talked today, the seriousness of that crime with the animal, the brutal butchering of that animal is a serious crime. But then she looked at the second one and said, the marijuana charge is not that serious, and it's not a level in which I'm going to say it's a serious and persistent problem with Mr. Lanius. And so the judge gets along and says it's factor two is not sufficient enough to necessitate an adult certification. So we go to the third element, which is to take in the juvenile systems and the capability and the appropriateness of addressing the needs of the community and the interests of the public safety. Now, when we look at Mr. Lanius, we have to look at him as now the individual. What is his lifestyle like? What is his situation? And when you look at that and you look at the evidence of this case, you have to look at what the report showed from Mr. Clark and actually ask yourself, was that a true and fair investigation by a non-biased individual who, on the way down to the adult certification hearing, told Mr. Lanius that he was looking into suing his wife for defamation? The very day that Mr. Lanius is going through the most important process of his life, where this court has consistently found could be the worst punishment in a juvenile's life, he puts him under that stress. Not only that, but prior to the actual filing of that report, he, Mr. Clark, transferred Mr. Lanius from Las Vegas up to Parr Boulevard and told him, I'm only looking for time served and a termination of your probation. But it's all changed now. And look at the report. It's pretty clear. Page one of the report doesn't even allege the right crime. The crimes were battery with a deadly weapon and a battery of substantial bodily harm. He alleges that Mr. Lanius was an active participant in this case, which was not alleged in the petition, nor was it alleged in the motion for certification. So we're also looking at his lifestyle. Mr. Lanius lives way out in the middle of nowhere, up by Susanville.
How old is your client?
My client now is, at the time, Your Honor.
How old is he now?
He's now 18 years old. He may be 19 now, but I believe he was 18. And that brings me to another issue, Your Honor, as you mentioned the age. The time period in which we're looking at this case is really significant, because the state is arguing that they don't have any time constraints whatsoever on filing this motion to certification. But that's really not what this court has ever has found. In fact, when you go to the state versus the second judicial case where they looked at whether or not the statute on the death penalty issue, they looked at the rule and the statute, they put them together and said, you have to file the death penalty within 30 days because we need procedural, it needs to be sufficient to meet due process requirements. And the issues in this case are almost exactly the same, where in the death penalty case, the court looked at it and said, if the state gets what they want and they can file it at any time, they can go through the entire process, go through a trial, almost all the way through the trial, and at the end of it say, we're going to go ahead and do the death penalty case. And the court said, clearly, that is not something that gives substantial notice for due process. That case is exactly the same, almost exactly the same as this case, because now the state is arguing that they don't have any requirement of a 30-day period. And so they can go all the way through on a juvenile case, all the way until they're in trial, and say, you know what, we're going to go ahead and adult certify this individual. That's, again, not sufficient notice for an adult certification. They're almost, the cases are so similar, it gives us a great understanding of where we need to go. And so when you go in and you look at their age, look at what happened. The initial allegation happened in February of 2000, and according to seven, I think it was 2008. And that went from a whole entire process. 199 days later was February of 2009, which is when Mr. Lanius was actually served. There was 223 days later, the state, after knowing the facts, refiled an amended petition and added additional charges against Mr. Lanius. 232 days, they finally gave notice. And during that period of time, Mr. Lanius got married. He turned 18. And what happened? The state used that against him to show that he is an adult. Now, that's improper under my impression because we're looking at what the kid was doing at the time of the incident. We can't wait all this time and then say, 5 years later, the kid's now 18 years old. We're going to go ahead and certify him as an adult. And it brings apart where we're going in this case of the time frames and that nature. So we're looking at the judge, and she specifically looks at what can happen. And we're looking at the third factor. And the third factor clearly shows that, and the judge came across, that there was anger management that Mr. Lanius could get. And that's clearly something that would be beneficial for the community because we're talking about an individual that was adjudicated for hacking up a cow. Now we're also talking about an individual that if he was convicted, that would be something in regards to anger management to better his standings to say, you shouldn't have been in that situation, and therefore we want you to take that anger management. There's other things involved. There's placements in certain facilities. There's commitments. And that was clear by the judge where she looked at how seriousness those other additional charges were when she found that there was another, the court never instituted a suspended commitment, and the court never instituted a commitment on either of those charges. So it's clear that Judge Doherty took a lot of time. She had 3 days of hearings. She took an entire week of before she made her decision. She really went into the evidence. You can see it from her oral order, if not from the drafted order that was obviously drafted by us in that regard. So I think that to answer Judge Seda's question, I think that this is not one of those cases that we should look at and overturn Judge Doherty. I think that that would set a terrible precedent in regards to judges that actually looking at other cases, like the Eric case, and trying to find a rational decision in that case. And then it brings us back to the time frame in which we're arguing here. And it's clear that, first of all, just a brief statement in regards to the plain error. This is not plain error by Judge Doherty in regards to using a statute or using a court rule that ultimately was shown that the statutes do not match up. In fact, it was the state of Nevada that specifically put everybody on notice that Washoe District Court Rule 33 and under their interpretation was applicable under the state under this certification hearing. And as the court knows, the court has inherent powers to dismiss any action. And so when we're looking at the state that says we're going to go through an adult certification action on Washoe District Court Rule 33, and we're going to process the entire case through it, they've not only acquiesced to the procedure that the court is now going to follow, they conceded that was going to be it, and they were the ones that instituted it. And this court has found that in cases where defendants, or in cases when attorneys acquiesce to a procedure and don't object to it, then that is not something that the court should take them on a review. In fact, there are two cases that this court has previously done, which is the Moore versus State case and the Morsicata versus the Save on Drugstore. And both of those cases had to do with whether or not the court violated the rule in regards to jury selection. And the court specifically said the Supreme Court concluded that the failure to follow the procedures outlined in NRS 175 did not affect Moore's substantial rights when they did that. And in both of those cases, the attorney acquiesced to it. And here in this case, the state actually provided us with the rules that not only they interpreted that were applicable, but the state followed, and so did Mr. Lanius in relying on what it is, because he relied on that statute because he allowed for an investigation to occur, which was ordered pursuant to Washoe District Court Rule 33, which allowed Mr. Clark to submit his adult certification investigation. And second, when we go and we look at the statutory construction, we're looking at a court rule with a statute. We're not looking at a statute to statute where the state is arguing that there would be an assertion. We're looking at a court rule and a statute. And the court here has consistently said that we need to look at those situations to make sure we harmonize the court rules with each other and with the statute, so that both the court rule and the statute have effect. And that seems pretty clear in this case that can be accomplished, because the state has already shown that can be accomplished, because they have said that under the NRS statute, we're making a motion and we're also moving forward on Washoe County District Court rule. So if we harmonize it and make it so that both of them have an effect, we simply say the court has the right to require a 30-day notice to file. And then we move down the process with a 35-day hearing, and then we go through with an investigation. And with that, Your Honor, if I can have just a few seconds to conclude.
Please.
Yes, thank you. Your Honor, the certification of juvenile offenders to the adult court has always been characterized accurately by this court as the worst punishment a juvenile system is empowered to inflict. As is such, the process of certifying a juvenile must adhere to strict standards of notice to the juvenile of the specific charges and the rule in which the court is to follow. In this case, the state specifically set up the rules themselves by moving for certification through Rule 33, which all parties relied on during this situation. Now the state, after it was unsuccessful in the lower court, wants this court to change the rules after they specifically agreed to follow them. This action by the state should shock the conscience of our judicial system, and this court should not allow such a result. Additionally, I believe that this court should not delve into Judge Doherty's decision on the decisional mixtures, because she adhered to the law, she adhered to her discretion, and she made the right decision. So on behalf of Mr. Lanius, I ask the court to affirm Judge Doherty's decision in full. Thank you very much.
Counsel, again, I appreciate your point of view, and we'll decide it. I just want to reiterate, I have the same concern Justice Sada said at the beginning. The three of us were trial judges. Between the three of us, we've done hundreds of criminal trials, and we got a lot of young people out here in the audience. We have some judges from Iraq and all. I think this is applicable here, the judges in Iraq do a great job trying to curb the violence in that society and all right now. It's a difficult job, and we empathize that they probably have a much tougher job than we do. But my point is that we have situations where we've seen juveniles get in trouble and the degree of violence gets progressive and all. And Mr. Lanius has gotten married and all, which is good. I hope he's settled down, but I just hope for his sake, that he takes seriously what Mr. Hattelstead said, and that regardless of what we do here, and try and turn his life around, because usually when the violence escalates, it gets worse and worse and worse. So unless you stop, and then now he's an adult, and you know, if the next time it's prison, you know, if it's a serious violence and all. So that's my only point. Really, the legal issues are a different issue, but I think we have grave concern about that.
And I appreciate your comments, Your Honor. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Mr. Hattelstead, I'd like to give you 2 minutes to rebut.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
And I hate to eat into those graciously given 2 minutes, but I need to know whether or not you waived application of Rule 33.
Waived it? No.
Strike that. Whether or not you acquiesced
to we did.
Its use, and therefore your argument here might be a bit disingenuous.
Yes and no. I suggested to the court earlier, I think it's just plain error. We acquiesced in the way things are done because that's the way they've been done. This case, I would respectfully submit to the court, is unique in the sense that when the time clock is running and the sands are going through the hourglass, Mr. Lanius is in the wind. Okay? We filed our petition. If there was a mistake, it's when we filed the petition. He was arrested ultimately in Vegas on a warrant from Lassen County because he absconded from his probation there. If we had waited until he was arrested and then filed our petition, we might not have this argument. But we filed the petition in July of 2008, and then he's arrested in 2009. So I would respectfully submit to the court that you just can't take seriously the thought that we're somewhat acquiescing in the way things went to the point of being waiving of an argument here. Mr. Lanius was in the wind at all relevant times. If he could have been served, he would have been served. He's on probation from two jurisdictions. They can't find him. If he hadn't made the mistake of coming into the country from the Philippines in Las Vegas, if he had come in through Los Angeles or San Francisco, who knows what would have happened? And I agree. The theoretical public policy foundation for a rule like this is not to let these things dangle forever. But if we're going to apply the rule, Rule 33, then we have to look at Rule 21, because Rule 21 imposes the sanction. There's nothing in the rule that says dismissal. There's nothing in Rule 33 that says dismissal. There's nothing in the statutes that says dismissal. In fact, there's no other court rule in the state that has Rule 33 or anything like it. That's why I argued in the brief that if we removed the application of the rule, then we simply look at due process, and due process was not violated here because the defendant wasn't prejudiced in any material way. All of the delay in this case was him. He is in the wind. When the time clock is ticking and the sands are through the hourglass, he's gone. He's not even in the country. So, yes, we did acquiesce in it, but I think it's simply by virtue of this is business as usual and this is how we do it. Otherwise, I think it's due process, and then maybe you look at standards like what happened in the Eric case or the Anthony case, and you look at the Speedy trial. As far as the merits are concerned, Your Honor, again, I just invite the court, and returning to your question, Justice Sade, I think that's the substantive question here, is the extent to which the court delves into the discretionary powers of the lower court. And as I've suggested, there's precedent for the court doing that in a variety of circumstances. Sufficiency of evidence is the biggest one, the most obvious one. That's the kind of argument we're raising here, is if there's a finding of fact in this case, which there was, and it's not based on substantial evidence, it should be not given any deference. So we'd like the court to do a de novo review, just like it would in any sufficiency of the evidence case, and reach the conclusion that we've respectfully requested today, and that's reversal.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much for the extra time.
Both of you, excellent arguments and very good briefs on behalf of both sides.
Mike, yeah. I have to explain to the students what we do next.
Yeah, but I'm going to this case will stand submitted, and we'll excuse these.